There's a death curse around these parts. Bet you feel all warm and fuzzy from that intro, don't you? I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd from ThisWeekInGeek.net. I am joined with...
David Double D Dennis.
And happy Friday the 13th.
Two in a row.
Yeah, two in a row this year. Kind of exciting, actually. Though I see March is a less threatening month for killers. I don't know. It's not quite spring yet. Killers probably hibernating.
It's not as antarctically cold as February was.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. The weather is starting to take a bit of a turn here, so thank God for that. Now that we've dated this podcast, which is what we do. So, as if you can't guess, I wonder what movie we're going to be talking about tonight.
I don't know. Something maybe related to this very specific date on which it will be released.
That's right. We're looking at Care Bears 2, the movie. starring Jack Black.
Electric Boogaloo.
That's right, guys. We're looking at the original Friday the 13th. We're looking at the uncut version. So this is from the Blu-ray that was released a couple years ago. So not the box set that came out, I think, last year or the year before last. Paramount released four of these things with holographic covers. And they only did 1 through 4. They didn't do the full series, which is really unfortunate, because there's these really neat shorts attached to them, if I remember correctly. Either that or it's the box set. I can't remember which. But there is a new Blu-ray box set, so it's not available in Canada, which is really friggin' stupid. And to import it is ludicrously expensive. Something like $130 or some shit like that. So anyway, we're going to do this. So we're watching this on an Xbox One. So hopefully your time codes will match up here, because doing this on game consoles can be a little hit and miss here. So I'm hitting play on the main menu. You should see a Paramount logo.
The cool old one from the
80s. I love the old ones. See, that's to me, I don't know, just the way it has that weird film grain to it sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's the 80s to me right there.
And the fact that it says a Golf and Western company, which isn't true anymore.
I had no idea what that even meant the whole time.
I think it was just the larger conglomerate that owned Paramount at the time.
And now Paramount, the money-making machine that it is.
A Viacom company, I think, now?
I want to say so. So, in this original Friday the 13th...
I haven't seen this movie in forever.
Oh, man. You know, the first one's the one I've actually seen the least.
Oh.
I've seen 2, 3, 4, like, everything, except the first one. I wouldn't say I find it boring, but it's probably the best made of them.
Yeah, it's the one that kind of stands on its own the most, but it has the least amount of Jason murdering people in crazy ways.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the murders are brutal.
I mean, this one, since it was the first one, I think it was taking itself a lot more seriously.
Yeah. And there's a really cool documentary I really think you guys should check out. It's called Camp Crystal Lake Memories. It's like a 5-hour documentary, and it covers each version, or each movie gets its own like half hour to 45 minutes. And it's incredibly detailed, which is really, really something kind of special.
Wow.
I've watched it probably 3 or 4 times.
Other franchises.
They did it for Nightmare on Elm Street with Never Sleep Again. Actually, same guys who did it. Tommy Hudson and... I can't remember the other guy's name, and I've interviewed him.
So these guys are ultimate horror fans.
Yeah.
Well, actually, to shame.
The guys who did this actually made... they wrote and directed Halloween Part 6.
Oh.
Which the studio completely butchered. And the producer's cut is, I think, the definitive version of it, I think. Probably got some details wrong on that. But look at the restoration on this. Is that not super nice looking? I mean, the blacks are nice and rich.
It's a little bit grainy, but that's...
it kind of adds to
the original. Well, it's because they filmed it in the dark, so it would have been the way the film was actually exposed at the time. Like, the darker it is, the more grain you're going to need to expose properly.
You may hear me drinking during this podcast. I'm sorry, guys.
I won't forgive you.
You know what's fucked up? I've been playing so much Dragon Ball Xenoverse this past week. That's all I can hear is Goku screaming, "I'll never forgive you." Whenever I hear someone say that now, it's so ridiculous. But this is like the golden era of horror when you had...
Yeah, late 70s, early 80s, I think.
I'd say probably up to about 1987 would be about the best era for me. And like everything past that tries a little too hard, I'd argue. The Italian horror scene's really awesome right now. You're getting all these copycat slashers. Like, after this, you'll get, like, April Fool's Day, Mother's Day, New Year's Evil. All these ridiculous knockoffs.
And even Friday the 13th itself was a bit of a ripoff of Halloween.
Yep.
So then you had ripoffs of a ripoff.
Yeah, like, you had Halloween with John Carpenter and Mustafa Akkad. I think that's the producer of it. This one is Sean S. Cunningham.
It's even this intro is very similar to the beginning of Halloween. Like, yeah. It's the past. It's showing the origin story like 20 years ago, and it's all shot in not all of it, but a significant amount of it is shot in first person from the killer's perspective. It's pretty much exact to the beginning of the first Halloween movie.
Mm-hmm. And this is before the Friday the 13th movies kind of got known as the morality tales.
I think this one kind of set that up a little bit.
It starts to set it up. It's more in the other ones where I'd say it does that.
Hmm.
Though, arguably, we know who the killer is here. I mean, because if you're listening to this, you clearly know it's Jason's mom.
You spoiled it.
Yeah, I know, right? You're listening to this while you're watching this movie for the first time, you fucking moron. Here's the thing. I never understood why she wouldn't just fucking tackle her ass.
Or throw something heavier than a box.
Yeah, like fucking run at her. Or if you're going to take a box, hit her in the fucking eye. Like, I can't remember what I was watching, but I was watching like a horror movie or something. And no, it was the first Halloween. And Jamie Lee Curtis's character hits Michael Myers in the eye with a clothes hanger. And you might think, big deal, it's a clothes hanger. You ever taken a clothes hanger to the eye? It hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts a lot. And it baffles me in horror movies where you are cheering for beautiful idiots. Because they...
Well, I think a lot of people are cheering for the bad guy, actually.
Well, it's weird, though, because you never seem to think of, like, how would you reasonably fight back? And, I don't know, like... When horror movies became more self-aware in the 90s with, like, Scream and all that shit, they kind of explored that with protagonists becoming smarter.
That's what I love about Hack Slash so much, which, if you've never read it, you should check it out, because that's basically the main girl in that, Cassie Hack, actually does fight back and is good at it.
Yeah, because she was, like a former victim.
Thing. Yeah. She's like the final girl of the original story and then goes around to other towns
protecting them from slashers or something.
Yeah.
I know they've done several notable crossovers. I know they did one with Chucky. They've done one with Ash from Evil Dead. And I want to say they've done one with like Pinhead or something, but I'm not sure.
They did a Reanimator one.
That's it. That's probably what I'm thinking of. With, once again, a great horror movie from the 80s by Stuart Gordon, if I'm not mistaken.
I love Reanimator.
Though the sequels get a little stupid.
I never saw the other two movies, but they're really hard to find. Like, it's not that hard to find the first Reanimator, but Bride and Beyond Reanimator, like, I've never seen them anywhere.
You know, that's why services like Netflix should always carry a huge catalog of horror. But the problem is, though, and this is just a bit of a tangent here, finding good horror movies on Netflix is so hard because you can never see everything they have. There's no search all function. So when I find a good horror movie on Netflix, it's usually just by random chance. Like, I have Netflix.
They have a thing that's just like a subgenre for like suspense or something, and it usually has horrors in there,
but you'll get like Friday the 13th next to Sleeping with the Enemy or something like that. You'll get like these really weird choices. Like Netflix's algorithms are so fucked up. And even for Friday the 13th movies, they have the first four. I don't think they have five. Five is one I'm pretty sure they don't have, or they don't have number two. I think that one has some really weird rights mixed up in it.
Hmm.
Although, one thing I really like about the Friday the 13th movies, and this is such a dude thing, almost all of them have really, really pretty girls in them. And I mean not saying, oh, but these kind of movies define what I found to be the classic 80s cute for girls. Like,
yeah, the 80s had a very distinct style. I think every decade has a distinct style of beauty.
Mm-hmm,
and
like the 90s you'd call Baywatch-ish.
Yeah, it was all like fake tits, basically. And I wasn't a big fan of the style of beauty from the early 2000s. Now I think it's getting more back to a classic style.
More girl next door sort of thing?
Yeah.
I love that guy. I think
there's
he passed away, too.
There's always the creepy guy. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, I think he passed away at, like, throat cancer or something. Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people have actually died from the Friday the 13th casts. Just natural causes or anything.
Well, I mean, it's been, like, 35 years, so
although,
that's going to happen.
Although, I can't remember which one. I want to say it was the... It's either the survivor from this one or number two. I can't remember, so guys, forgive me. Actually had a stalker who managed to get into her apartment and everything. And that's
what?
Weird. But yeah, like that's back in the
crazy.
80s, that was not unheard of. And people actually got killed like that, too, through like crazy fans and everything. And that's even more scary now when you think of like social media and people getting doxxed right now. Like having all their information put out there on the internet. But that's enough about real life horror. Yeah. That would suck.
Yeah, especially after making a horror movie and being like, oh, thank God, it's completely fake. Psych!
See, you know who I'm surprised was never stalked? Nev
you?
Campbell. Yeah. No, I've actually had a stalker. I've had two, actually.
Oh, I think I remember one of your stalkers.
Yeah. They're always crazy girls.
People, but yeah.
I got boob pics out of it, so I guess I really can't complain. I'm just glad they didn't show up on my door with a knife or a shotgun. My wife growls at me.
So Nev Campbell was never stalked?
See, I'm kind of surprised she never was, because I consider her to be like the best 90s horror protagonist. Oh, what? Sydney something. I can't
and
remember what the
last...
She was
pretty hot.
Yeah,
so.
And you don't see her in a lot anymore. Actually, one of these things that was always talked about from Friday the 13th movies, they wanted to do a movie with the survivors of this and the survivors from Nightmare on Elm Street and have them fight Freddy and Jason. That was a proposed sequel. At one point,
wasn't
eventually got made
original,
into a comic.
Wasn't that one of the original ideas for Freddy versus Jason?
I think so. Something along those lines, anyway. But, like...
That would be awesome if they got, like, just, like, a best of kind of thing of all the survivors from a bunch of different horror franchises. And,
I would...
like, at the beginning of the movie, they have, like, this new guy, and he just kills off all the other horror guys, and he's like, I'm the new guy in town, and they have to, like, team up to take him down.
I would take, from the Friday the 13th movies... I would take Jenny, who I think was the survivor of number two, because the one from this one gets a screwdriver in the head in number two, if I'm not mistaken.
I think, don't they kill her off right at the beginning of the next one?
Yeah, right at the beginning. Jason somehow flies to New York or something. Actually, no, hold that thought. I remember I did a show with James Rolfe a couple years ago, and we're talking about we're talking about Halloween, rather. And at the beginning of Halloween H2O, or water, Michael Myers comes to Jamie Lee Curtis's academy, where she's like a vice principal or some bullshit like that, right? And they clearly say Haddonfield is in Illinois. This prep school or what the fuck ever it is?
I thought Haddonfield was in Ohio.
No, you're thinking of Springwood from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh.
So they clearly say it's... middle America, let's say.
Okay.
The prep school is in California. Michael Myers steals a car. So I want you to really picture the Michael Myers road trip.
Like, not where he's stealing the car, but just where he's driving,
yeah,
in between.
Yeah, just driving along, stretching the road, obeying traffic
laws. With this banjo music playing, nonetheless. Or moving right along from the Muppets movie playing in the background while he's driving.
Like, it's so ridiculous. But if I could take characters from this, I would take Jenny from number 2, Tommy Jarvis from 4 and 5 and 6, maybe Tina Shepherd from number 7, the psychic chick, and that'd be my Friday the 13th dream team. Because you don't get, like, there are very few memorable male protagonists, although number 9 kind of.
You don't
want to
have resurrected Kevin Bacon in there?
No resurrected
zombie Kevin Bacon.
Well, he does nothing anyway. Nice socks, asshole. You know what he looks like? He looks like he could be Weird Al's creepy brother.
I thought he kind of looked like that brawn paper towel guy, or like he was, or like someone who doesn't actually look like the brawn paper towel guy dressing up as the brawn paper towel guy.
So he's cosplaying right now.
Yeah.
On their way to Comic-Con. Yeah, that girl back there gets Alice. She gets killed at the beginning of the next movie by getting a screwdriver in the head. What amazes me is that Jason could find her. Okay, let's accept this. Which means Jason had to look at a phone book or call 411 to figure out where this person is. I mean,
you've reached information.
I'll connect you. Please hold. Okay. Well, you know what? If you want to take the piss out of any horror movie villain or like any bad guy, okay, I want you to clear your mind, fellas. Serene, clear. Okay. Now I want you to picture Jason or Freddy Krueger or whoever, the most threatening guy you can think, Dr. Doom.
Okay.
Now picture him tying his shoes. Instant pussification. Or picture Jason
taking a shit. And it's
something
they all have to do.
I mean, there's just so many goofy things that you don't think about in movies. And I know it's the movie magic that you never see. Because, you know, it's not important to the story. But when I think about Jason waking up with morning wood, it takes all threat out of him. What if Jason has irritable bowel syndrome or something?
And that's why he's so angry all the time.
Yeah, you know, he just got shit running down his leg. He's just a scary guy. Or from the remake of Friday the 13th, or the reboot, rather, that came out back in 2009. I saw this with Pierce, and I remember telling this story on Movie Madness a few weeks ago. So go check out that episode. I was telling the story about how Jason becomes the master electrician from Lowe's. And he has, like, this huge Lowe's gift card. He just loads up. It just always struck me as ridiculous. And, of course, stupid.
This guy looks like he's 40. Like, is that supposed
I think
to be
he's
her dad? Or?
I think they're supposed to be boyfriend-girlfriend.
That's really weird.
I know, it's creepy, but back then, it's the May summer romance thing, or whatever the fuck you call it.
That always happens in horror movies. Like, I went to see, and don't see this movie because it's terrible, but the Ouija movie?
The stupid board game movie.
Oh, it was terrible. The boyfriend from that movie looks like he's 40, and he's in high school. They're supposed to
what
be in, like,
fuck?
Grade 12, and he's older than me.
No, Dave.
I mean, the girl that's in it is also probably around my age in real life, but she could pass for 17, but not this guy.
No, Dave, we're supposed to be understanding of those with special needs.
Sorry. He had to repeat grade 12 13 times.
Ah, so he's Corky's father. Corky is an inside joke from us here at Twig. More like Dave and John. JT from Saskatoon.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It was a random picture that
some wrestling
that
thing
Jonathan Tadarian took of like a guy in a crowd at Raw or something, and he had a green Power Rangers t-shirt on, and just this like the goofiest looking person you'll ever see in your life. And one of the divas, I think, was getting too close to his face, and he looks like she has cooties. It's hilarious. He's like, get away from me. Oh, man.
My God, Kevin Bacon looks young here. Now,
well, he would have been, I think he's around my mom's age, so he was probably around 20.
20-something, yeah. Now, what's not showing is his Magneto helmet. Because this would take those.
Yeah.
Although he was a wicked Sebastian Shaw.
Yeah, I love Kevin Bacon whenever he decides to play the bad guy.
Although my favorite Kevin Bacon movie of all time, definitely Tremors.
Oh, yeah.
I remember watching that movie up here in Canada way back in the day. They just show movies on CTV on Friday nights. And I remember seeing the edited for TV version of Tremors.
Oh, nice.
Go get him, Hawkeye.
That's not going to be a setup for a future kill.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be Katniss Everdeen.
Movies like this and Sleepaway Camp make me glad I never really went to... I went to summer camp once when I was a kid. It was like a one-week thing, I think.
These movies made me never, ever want to go near a camp, yeah. Ever. I mean, if the 80s
scared me for drugs...
It always
looks so terrible in movies. Like, there's never a nice movie about a summer camp.
Yeah, you know, like, it's always, like, monsters or fucking lunatics in the woods or something. Yeah, but no, fuck that. I will stay and take my life in my own hands with like, street crime. I will deal with that.
I think in any other Friday the 13th movie, there would be a kill by this point. That's probably why this is the one you watch the least.
Well, yeah.
It has the most actual character development.
Actually, you could put a really good case together for Friday the 13th Part 4. 4 and 5, I think, actually have some of the best characters you actually give a shit about them. Which is, obviously, these movies are more meant for thrill kill. But, I don't know, I think these movies get a bad rap in a lot of ways. I mean, yeah, Siskel and Ebert in the 80s said these are atrocious pieces of trash and they should never be watched.
But that just makes people want to watch them even more.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever Siskel and Ebert lay into something, it's like, man, I need to see this now. It's like the movies that they absolutely love or absolutely hated that everyone tries to seek out. Like, if it's a movie that, like, one of them kind of liked and the other one didn't like it that much, it's like, who cares?
Yeah, like,
but if they both despise it, it's like, man, I got to see this.
Like, I remember one of the movies I sought out because it was banned. Please don't judge me on this. It's a movie called Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. Apparently they killed actual animals or something.
Yeah, and people thought they killed the actual actors during it. And movies like this were banned in the UK under the video nasty rule or whatever in like the 80s, and some of them were only lifted in the last couple of years.
Why, just because they were so gross?
Violent and over the top, oh, okay. And all that shit. And the MPAA... hated these movies. Like, Friday the 13th Part 7 was hacked to shit because they had to cut back so many frames of violence or gore and all that shit.
Which is something we never really brought up, that this is the uncut version of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, so you should see more.
I don't think we've gotten to anything really uncut
yet. Not yet. Maybe some pieces of dialogue, maybe. Which, I know there's some website out there you can look at, see what the versions are.
Yeah, if you go to IMDb for pretty much any movie that has more than one version and go to their frequently asked questions, usually the last question will always be, what are the differences between this and that version? And you go to, I think it's movie-censorship.com, and it'll give you like a frame-by-frame breakdown of the exact differences between the two versions. And it's pretty useful.
See, and that's such a psych out because it looks
like this was probably added in or stretched out a little bit.
Yeah.
I doubt they could have showed her throat being slashed for quite so long.
But then again, you look at movies like, because this is Tom Savini, so clearly he knows what the fuck he's doing. You'd see stuff like Dawn of the Dead, which is 77. But then again, maybe the censors were a little bit looser then. I don't know.
I don't know. Censorship never made sense to me because it's always like...
You know it's pretend.
Some stuff they make them cut down on, but it's not that bad. And then there's other stuff they're like, oh, that's fine. Like a weird example is at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, the scene that horrified me as a child.
The face melting dude.
Yeah. They totally okay with a guy's face melting off on camera, but the guy whose head explodes, they had to add like a plume of smoke in front of it or they would get an R rating. Because, you know, that's not okay. It's just, I don't know, none of it makes sense.
I know there's a really good censorship doc on Netflix. I don't know if it's still there, but you should check it out. It's really, really interesting. I just wish I could remember what the hell it's called.
Oh, is this like Clean Flicks or something?
No, well, the same thing. Where they make movies for Mormons or something.
Yeah, that was Clean Flicks.
That was a really interesting doc, yeah. Too. But yeah, this one's about censorship, and they talk to people like John Waters.
That's I just quite saw the bulge. Kevin Bacon's
package. I could have done without that.
He's got quite the bulge in there. He actually had quite the body in general. No homo.
Yeah, no homo. Hey, I can appreciate a muscular... I watch wrestling. Of course I can appreciate muscular-looking dudes.
Fair enough. I don't think there's really anything gay about being able to appreciate another guy's body.
Yeah, because, you know, like, that guy's muscular. He looks like a hero.
We're getting way off track.
Yeah, I know.
Someone's going to save a clip of me saying, there's nothing really gay about appreciating another man's body.
Although, I think it was Friday the 13th, part 7. They called the gay Friday the 13th because, like, half the cast and crew were, like, gay or lesbian or something like that.
Really?
Once again, they talk about it in the Crystal Lake Memories doc. Or there's a book, I think it's by Titan Books, they also talk about it there, too. Not 100% sure on that, but I know with Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, they called that the homoerotic version, too. Which, the subtext is definitely there. Plus naked guys in showers.
There's a lot of nice bikini action in this scene as well. On top of the nice Kevin Bacon Speedo action.
And his bulge. Let's not forget the bulge.
This girl is really pretty, actually. Like, it's too bad she got axed off right away in the second one.
Mm-hmm. Plus she does...
Watch out for that rubber snake.
Although she still does conventions and stuff, which is cool. She's aged pretty well. I hate snakes. I really fucking hate snakes.
I'm not a huge snake fan either.
I've killed more than a few with a fucking machete. Obviously, they're more afraid of me than I am of them, but I say, fuck that, I've got a knife, go away. See, that's another thing. The last time I went camping... Nature freaks me out. And the last time I went camping, there were guys pretending they were skeletons and dwarves. I went to a LARPing weekend.
Oh, okay.
It was fucking weird. And I'm Mr. Roleplay himself.
And even you were a little bit like...
A little bit weirded
okay,
out.
Okay, guys.
It does not take Settle seven of you to bit. Kill one snake.
Yeah, there were quite a few snakes by where I lived when I grew up. But, yeah. It was
this
never...
seems like a little bit of overreaction.
Yeah.
Snake wrangler.
That looks like they actually killed the
I
snake.
I think they kind of did, actually. I'm not 100% sure of that. May he rest in peace, Mr. Snakey.
Yeah, that sucks. Although I don't think there was as, like, intense of, you know, animal rights kind of laws around at that time.
Or if they were, they didn't have the internet as a kind of platform.
Yeah.
I'm not offended at all. Not in the very least.
I thought this was an accurate representation of your culture.
Well, of course. I mean...
Okay, now they just look like the village people. They got the cop, the Indian. They're just missing the construction worker.
I'm pretty sure they got that helmet at the Salvation Army. But hey, wherever you can save money on a film production, you definitely do it.
Especially the movie like this where they probably made it on a... Yeah.
I think this was made... I'm pretty sure this was made for less than a million.
They give you little facts on the box set. Let me check here, actually. I think it says $550,000.
That's ridiculous.
And then by the second movie, it was up to $1,250,000 and just kept going up and up and up from there. So.
Which is weird, because horror movies, they say, are always cheap to produce and make, but...
Well,
you'd spend money on special effects and everything.
Less than $3 million is still really cheap for a movie.
Man, I can't imagine being able to make a movie. Although, movies like this is something I'd like to make.
Like something that, you could make for cheap, but that would still have some kind of an impact.
Yeah, I like horror movies like this. Like a horror
movie throwback.
I mean, it's cool to have the gore and the kill and the create an iconic franchise out of something like this.
Because there's been a lot of movies recently that have tried to do that I've watched, like trying to bring back the 80s style, and they're always terrible.
I think the best I've seen is Hatchet.
And they're so cheesy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hatchet was the closest I've seen recently.
I think the guy who did that was a guy named Adam Green, I think.
Another pretty good one, if you ever get the chance to check it out, is kind of like a mockumentary type of movie called Behind the Mask. Yeah, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
That was surprisingly good. I thoroughly enjoyed that one. That was from Anchor Bay about 7 or 8 years ago.
Gives you like a kind of a fresh spin on this genre. Which is the thing with slasher movies, is they've been done so many times, the same formula over and over again, that by this point you can either do the same formula again, or you can find a way to play around with it.
I'd like to know why he was just hanging out in there. like, how long have you been standing there? Just curious.
I peed my pants 3 hours ago.
Why are you in my closet? Or in my pantry?
He was eating all the canned peaches.
God sent me... God told you to stay in my closet?
Yeah.
That's oddly specific.
God sent me specifically to this pantry to eat all of the peaches.
So wait. Let me tell you. Our Lord and Savior, creator of all the universe, told you to hide in a pantry.
That's works divine in purpose, mysterious if I've ever heard ways, one. Okay?
You know what's weird? T-shirts like that, they look like fake jerseys, but they're always non-specific to any one team. They always look really fucking cheesy. And you only ever saw them in the 80s.
I don't know. I had a shirt like that not too long ago, like when I was younger.
Yeah, but Dave, you're like the same guy who went to a thrift store and bought a Mr. Big Tour T-shirt.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome. I still have that.
See,
I get all the best t-shirts.
If I was a smaller guy, I would wear weirdly vintage stuff. I really would.
I miss some of my older t-shirts. I used to have a Root Beer Tapper t-shirt. That was awesome.
My favorite t-shirt was one I wore in college, and it was snakes plus plane equals snakes on a plane. It was like the acronym spelled soap. Here we heard talking about t-shirts and horror movies.
Yeah.
But that's
they had the best t-shirts back in the 80s, really.
Well, that's another thing, too. Like, horror movies, specifically in the 80s, they're also dated by their fashion. I mean, stuff in the 90s, depending on when it is during the 90s, you could maybe get away with saying it happens modern day, but then the music dates it.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much anything. Even if you make something now, eventually the style we have now is going to...
I don't know. For example, Terminator 2, I think you could get away with that. Because there's nothing super specific outside of the music. Maybe the arcade. Everything else, I guess the computers, but for horror movies, you could probably make a pretty good argument for Scream. That's fairly timeless.
But I think
I never thought I'd say that about Scream.
what makes something timeless, though, isn't, like, how the people look or anything. It's, like, the
how well the movie
the
holds
actual
up.
Story. Yeah, which is why we still watch and talk about Friday the 13th today.
And a muskrat. Or a beaver.
I think it was a beaver. I don't know
which
exactly.
I love horror movies. In fact, one of my best things is I discovered years ago, I went to a theater double feature, and I saw Frankenstein and Dracula back-to-back, the original Universal Monster movies. And nice. Since then, I've seen, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, I've seen, like, Invisible Man, all that shit. And it's weird to see how the horror genre has evolved over the years, going through the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. The 60s was kind of weird. And you had the like, Hammer horror movies, and then you got into this type of stuff in the, like, 70s and 80s. 90s was kind of a weird time for horror, I think.
Yeah, 90s was all about, like, teen, like...
meta.
College, like, WB drama horror
Dawson's
movies.
Dawson's Creek with a machete.
Yeah, basically. And then now, it's all about supernatural presences and jump scares.
Yeah. Which
how
is
you
really
make a horror movie now is you have some kind of a weird demonic presence and it throws shit at the camera and makes people jump.
Yeah. And you have a really getting, good sound designer.
It's getting kind of old. I mean, it works really well in stuff like The Conjuring. But
yeah.
Then you also have stuff like Ouija.
Which looks utterly batshit stupid.
It is. It's terrible.
I think one of the worst movies I've seen for that. There was a movie, it was a remake. I saw this with Blair a few Halloweens ago. It was called The Stepfather. And I don't know what I was expecting. Hmm. But what I got was an hour and a half of utter hilarity. And people were getting pissy with me and Blair in the theater, so we kept laughing during the scary parts. I also remember during the 90s, they remade The Haunting with Owen Wilson.
Oh, yeah. And I've never seen it. I just watched the Nostalgia Critic review.
There's a point in it where Owen Wilson gets scared by these skeletons that come out of, like, a fireplace. And I'm at the movies with my friend Jared. We're maybe 14 or 15 years old. He busts a gut laughing. He's like, ooh, it's bones. What's it going to do to you? And everybody in the theater shot this kid a fucking death look. Although, that's something I really wish I was older during the 80s, because horror movies like this, you could take a date to them, and they were an experience. This was a Friday or a Saturday night. You'd go, you'd probably have a few drinks, more than likely, have a pizza, go to the movies, go home, get laid, and that was your weekend. But that was an awesome weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a pretty nice weekend.
But even still, like, everybody in the theater got into it. Like, everybody...
Especially because this wasn't a boring old cliche at this point. Like, it was a new... You didn't know what was going to happen next.
Like, there are very few movies I consider to be experience movies. Like, a good horror movie can be an experience movie. A good action movie, like a Die Hard... I'd say the closest thing for an action movie now that's considered an experience, The Expendables. Because, like, I've seen that with audiences, and they get really into it.
I remember when we went to see the first Rambo movie, how
and everybody was into it.
Yeah.
We had headbands. It was awesome. But, yeah.
But now it seems to be, like, stuff that people are really geeky for, and they'll dress up for it, like a Lord of the Rings.
Or Star Wars.
Or Harry Potter. Yeah.
Oh,
here comes a little bit of crack coming out there.
Yeah.
She's showing more crack than a drug dealer.
I remember those giant-ass flashlights with those retardedly huge batteries.
Oh, yeah, that's like a car battery on it.
Now, I can tell you a story of what you don't do. For some reason, a guy I went to school with named Ryan, this is like in the 8th grade, he was kind of an outdoorsy type. He had one of those batteries in his backpack, and I like, okay, whatever. And he had a fishing lure, like a double-ended fish thing. And I don't know why, but we decided to hook up the hooks to the terminals. We melted the fishing lure because there was so much current going through it. I couldn't believe how powerful that fucking thing was, because it started to smoke and shit. We're like, oh, God, we're in school. Oh, shit, what the fuck are we going to do? He's like, Mike, grab it. Like, you fucking grab it. You
fucking... Now, there's some science for you.
Yep. Don't do what Mike do. It very bad idea for you. Fuck you, Blair. I love you.
Why are you putting on the tiniest stick? Like, there's these big ass logs, and she takes like the stick that's gonna burn in like 3 seconds. Oh yeah, that'll keep your fire going.
Yeah, especially as it rages fucking death outside. Although I will say, camping when it's raining and thunderstorming is pretty legit cool.
Especially
atmospheric.
Yeah, especially if you tell creepy stories.
Like, I remember. The claw. I remember doing this type of stuff, or I would, me and my friend Liam, I wonder where that kid is. I miss him so much. But I remember we were probably around 16, maybe 15 at the time, and we were just sitting in the dark. There was like a huge thunderstorm going on outside, and I think I'm sleeping over at like his like parents' house. And I just start telling him scary stories. Had him legit fucking freaked out. I love scaring people. And I don't mean that in the asshole way. I mean that in as a storyteller. Which I've never considered myself that creative.
So were these stories you were actually coming up with?
Oh, yeah. Like, literally just give me 5 minutes. I'll create something weird and fucked up. And that's when I was really into, like, Lovecraftian horror. And doing the podcast with Steve and the other guys from Terrible Warriors, I freaked out one of our players named Erica, had her right scared another person. I've driven the tears because it got so intense emotion-wise. And that's another thing I kind of like about horror movies. If you get the right person, it's an experience to just watch them go through the different stages of fear. And I hope that doesn't sound weird and fucked up. But as a creative person or a person who... Wow. That's not fucked up at all. As a person who would, like, be a filmmaker or a storyteller, I can genuinely get what people would get out of that, like, to inspire fear, to inspire some kind of unemotion like that. Oh, kid's getting stoned. Not that we condone illegal drug use, but at the same time, it's weed. Who cares now?
And it's pretty amazing that they kept her alive despite that.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, as soon as you do drugs in a horror movie, it's instant death sentence.
Yeah, you're basically toast.
He's really savoring that boob.
She's got some awesome tan lines there. But that's another thing, too. Girls in the 80s didn't have to look like they walked off the manufacturing line. Like, they didn't have to have these bodies that were, you know... body by silicone or whatever, or built by Dr. So-and-so.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's this natural beauty, and even the guys looked a little less like fucking chiseled from the gym sort of thing. They look like, okay, he plays baseball. He's in good shape. Not like, hey, I can bench 350 pounds and crush your head like in the dust.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Weirds me the fuck out. I had that old school Monopoly board. And look at those old school beer bottles.
I haven't played old school Monopoly in a while.
I've got it on my Xbox One. Maybe we could play tomorrow.
Nice.
I actually have a My Little Pony board for it too.
Oh, nice.
Fucking hey.
I have Adventure Time Monopoly at home.
I kind of wish I'd gotten the official My Little Pony Monopoly. So, maybe later on this year, we'll see. I love board games.
Is there actually an official version of it?
Yeah.
Did they ever make a Friday the 13th Monopoly?
No, but I have seen fan-made ones. Actually, I've seen some really impressive fan-made Monopoly.
It would be awesome if they had a Monopoly, like, even a fan-made one that was all the, like... 80s horror slasher guys like
so Park
Michael
Place
Myers
and Park Place and Boardwalk would be Jason and Freddy.
Yeah,
community chest would be like survivor's luck or something like that. Which one of the things
the best death in this movie.
Oh yeah. And the hand is nondescript enough that you don't know that it's a woman. Like, especially when the first girl died, you saw the slash, it's clearly a man's hand. Although, fun fact, when Pamela Voorhees gets her head chopped off, watch the hands. Some particularly fun moments there.
Are they actually dude's hands?
Oh, yeah. There's hair on the knuckles and everything. Like Cro-Magnon, man. It's ridiculous. That's another thing. Like, if you can do horror movies in the rain during a thunderstorm right, you have such a beautiful sound palette to play with the rain and the dripping and all that stuff. See, honestly, I really wish during school I'd studied sound a little bit more. Because I would love to do sound stuff.
Enjoy doing, yeah.
Because, and that's one thing they teach you in film school that I'm aware of, is a good horror movie depends 50% on a good sound mix. Because you
need
it to drive
scare.
That's every
movie, but yeah, especially horror. Like, if you put a horror movie on mute, it's not really scary anymore, except for, I guess, a few bloody scenes, but there's no build-up to them, so it would just be like, oh, he's lying in his bed. Oh, he got killed. That's kind of gross.
Yeah.
But it's not really scary, because there's no... You don't have the music and the sound effects building up to the kill.
Yeah, and it's even those little accents, which can really add to it. And it's not just the whoosh, whoosh. But, like, the score here by Harry Manfredini, I think it is, it works. It's so atmospheric without being overpowering.
Oh, yeah, it's that iconic...
Which
I think is someone saying Jason, and he like remixed it using what would have been like old 80s loop to loop mixers and
something
stuff
like that. Like, they go into pretty extensive detail in the documentary and in the book for Crystal Lake Memories.
I always admire any kind of technical stuff from this era because they weren't using computers. Like, film editing was you actually had to cut real film. Sound editing involved actual tapes and, well, it still uses Foley, but I mean, it's all digitally recorded, but back then you had to have actual tapes and cut tapes together and
they were inventing stuff as they go, especially with Tom Savini and people like Stan Winston pioneering special effects.
Yeah, definitely. And they look as good then as an equivalent effect would now.
Yeah, and
which
that's
is amazing. Like, someone getting their throat sliced in this movie...
Looks legit.
Looks incredible. Like, it looks like they would use the exact same effect now, except probably add some digital blood or some bullshit.
I mean, one thing I can't stand, and I love the TV show The Walking Dead.
There's a lot of digital blood.
Yeah, and it doesn't look right.
Some of the kills in that, like, there was one the most recent episode where some blood got on the camera, which was cool, which also might have been digital, I don't know, but it looked pretty sweet. That was, like, the style of underwear back then, too. Everyone wore those kinds of
and
panties.
And the lighting. Right in the face.
Now it's all about the thongs. Ooh.
Such a good effect.
I'm going to have to look up after this, like, which parts of this were actually uncut.
I imagine that was probably held on for a few frames longer. Because I remember it being pretty, pretty quick in the original.
Hmm. How do you play
Strip Monopoly?
Yeah, like, is it if you don't have enough money, you have to take something off? Because then if you don't have enough money, you lose the game, so...
Maybe it comes down to if you can't pay your rent.
But again, then you lose the game.
Although,
like,
there...
What exactly would the rules of Strip Monopoly be?
If somebody knows, feedback at thisweekingeek.net.
I'm trying to figure it out in my head. It just doesn't make any sense. Unless it's like an optional thing, like you can pay the rent or you can take off an article of clothing.
I like how she leaves just when the game's getting good. Bitch.
Yeah, that guy's kind of disappointed.
He's like, you're one step from Skin City. Well, okay, he still has pants, so I'm presuming he has underwear on. Well, okay, all right, he would be two steps from Skin City.
You should never make that assumption back in the 80s. When underwear was optional.
Would be so rough in those jeans.
Especially back then when it was all skinny jeans. Not a lot of
acid
breathing
wash.
Room. Oh, those donuts look really good.
I want a hot sandwich. Totally making a snack after this.
Well, I guess this guy is supposed to be older.
You know what? Does this not look like the diner from Superman 2?
Maybe it's the same one.
Wouldn't that be funny? Clark Kent sitting at the other end of the fucking counter there.
I mean, I know there's a few diners like that a lot of movies use the same diner. Mm-hmm. There's one that it's in like Pulp Fiction, it's in The Big Lebowski. There's a bunch of movies that all use this diner because it's not a real diner.
It's just like a set somewhere?
Yeah, it's a set that they built in downtown Los Angeles where all these other restaurants are, and they use it specifically to film diner scenes for movies.
That's kind of awesome.
But that's like its sole purpose is just for people to go there and film.
You know what sucks about the Friday the 13th movies? Is there's no really iconic sets that are left. I mean, there are, like, you can go through through California or Georgia and see some of the external scenes for some of the houses. I'm pretty sure the Jarvis house number 4 is in California somewhere. But there's nothing like, oh, that's so-and-so's place or whatever. Unlike, say,
and even
Friday
the
13th.
The whole, like, camp has been
Yeah, because they
destroyed.
Use a different one every single time. Unlike, say, Nightmare on Elm Street, where, you know, 1428 Elm Street, you know, that's an iconic location. Sure, there's Camp Blood, Camp Crystal Lake, but it's never the same fucking thing twice.
Can you actually go to Elm Street? Like, the street that doubled as Elm Street, I guess?
Yes, it's somewhere in Southern California. Same with the house from Halloween, from Haddonfield. I think it was preserved by some historical society or something like that.
Wow.
Which there's another great documentary on Halloween. I don't know if it's on the new box set, but it was called like 25 Years of Halloween. I downloaded it like years ago because I couldn't find it to buy it. But it was so well done.
There's one that I think Scream Factory made about the Psycho franchise as well that I would love to check out at some point.
But I love it when people from our generation or maybe just a little bit older than us go back and make documentaries about this type
like
of stuff.
Stuff that we just loved when we were growing up.
Yeah, and really treat
well,
it with the respect that
Yeah,
it
I feel like we live in a generation because like in the 80s and 90s, this kind of thing was mostly just being controlled by big fat cats who wanted to use it to make money. And now it's like in the hands of people who grew up with it and loved it in spite of the fact that it was just made to make money. And now it's getting treated with the respect it deserves.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Transformers, which is still just being used to make
money. See, that's the thing. I don't. The problem is with that franchise, Michael Bay doesn't care. He wants to make something big, loud, and cool. And you know what? I'm okay with that on one level. On another level,
I want something and someone to actually give a shit about.
Yeah, like there could be more you could do with it, but you don't for whatever reason. Same with the Friday the 13th franchise. I'm not saying it has to be steeped in lore and all that shit. Although the sequel, which is allegedly filming this year for next year's release, maybe even this year's, they're going to explore the Jason's more supernatural roots, which I'm okay on one hand, but if it goes to Jason Goes to Hell levels of goofy, where they explain about the Voorhees curse.
Or
the
if it just relies on jump scares like every other horror movie nowadays.
Yeah, like, you have to give it to people who give a shit. But you can't give it to someone who gives a shit but isn't willing to compromise. You have to find that really weird happy medium.
Just on a side note here, I gotta say, this movie actually has surprisingly good cinematography for something shot so cheap.
Maybe the guy who shot it just came out of college and really wants to show off, maybe? I don't know.
They were probably everyone who worked on this was pretty inexperienced, I would guess.
Labor of love, probably.
But I mean, compared to like other cheaply made horror movies of the time... And that's my problem with a lot of really cheap horror movies is they have that kind of
cheap feel. Horrible, it looks like shit.
Yeah, they have like that horrible like shot on video in the 90s.
Yep, shot on shitio.
Look,
hate those.
Yeah, and it, like, no matter how good it is, it's like, oh, the horrible cinematography and crappy sound design, etc. of this movie is just ruining it. Like, it takes you out of it completely.
There's
and,
one movie.
This movie doesn't do that. It looks really nice.
There's one movie I showed you, and I think it looks especially good for its time, and it was a creative endeavor in and of itself, was that movie called Scarecrows.
Oh, yeah. And I fell asleep like three quarters of the way through it because we were watching it at like 4 a.m.
But that's the magic of coming to the Birdcage. Up all night watching horror movies.
Until I literally can't keep my eyes open anymore.
Although now that my cat, Dr. Wily, is sick, I now keep a regular sleep schedule so I can give him his pills every day at 6:30 in the morning. Because he's a good boy. It's weird being on a real sleep schedule, man. I get to see this thing called the day orb.
You actually get to see the sun while it's out.
I know, it's fucking weird.
You vampire.
Man, I remember when I would go to bed, or I'd wake up when people were coming home from work. I'm like, oh, it's 4 p.m. It's just time to get up. But considering I work on California time, that's how my natural body clock is. Like, noon is 9 a.m. to me. And I still get things done for the show. But still, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, like, movies like Scarecrow, creative concept... Doesn't look like shit, I think, anyway. Now, isn't there a special bulb they use to make flashlights do that? Because I remember like watching something about the X-Files, and they talk about whenever they film something, there are special flashlights.
Oh, that make it have, like, a stream of light, kind of?
Yeah.
This looks like it's just a normal flashlight, actually. It doesn't really have... But I know what you mean. Like, some movies, it has, like, really, like, a
really
stream
beam
coming out of it. Yeah. Like, E.T. comes to mind.
Yeah,
like
Steven
E.T., Spielberg,
the X-Files, stuff like
had
that.
Yeah, he had that style where he liked to have, like, headlights and flashlights actually providing, like, things that would provide light in real life, providing the light in the scene.
Which... See, I kind of wish I'd paid more attention in film class to when scenes look unnaturally well lit and it's supposed to be in the dark. And they have to pretend they can't see shit.
Someone asked Alfred Hitchcock about that once because he made a movie called The Lifeboat, which is one of his more underrated movies about just a bunch of people in a lifeboat after a ship sinks and just like the tension that builds between them. And... I guess, like, a really nitpicky person was like, wait a minute, if they're in the lifeboat, where's all the light coming from? And Hitchcock said, the same place that the music comes from.
So I wonder what's going to happen to her.
There's an element of movies that you have to have that suspension of disbelief. And movies kind of operate on their own logic, too. Like, there's stuff that happens in every movie that never would work in real life. Like being able to shoot a lock open.
Yeah.
Doesn't work, but in movies it does work. So if you get teleported into the movie world, go ahead and shoot as many locks as you can find.
Like, I remember watching, there's a scene in True Lies, for example, I think it is. and Jamie Lee Curtis, man, she gets brought up a lot in this commentary, she drops a MAC-10.
Oh, yeah, and it keeps firing while it's falling down the stairs but and say, kills yeah, like, no. 20 people. Yeah, guns are designed so that they don't do that.
I mean, if maybe the gun was built out of Meccano by an idiot, maybe, perhaps. But no, that stuff doesn't work. Or when people cock and recock a shotgun, you're wasting time and ammo, so to speak. Or
a lot of the ways people use guns and swords and weapons in general in movies, it just isn't how you're actually supposed to use it.
Yeah, like I remember finding out katanas are not actually these magical super weapons; they will actually shatter. Like if you hit a katana a certain
cut
way
through everything unless they're made out of adamantium.
Yeah, and they're always hey look my name's on the stove there. Look behind her.
Where
Mike D come and rock the sure shot. Some ill communication. If you catch that reference, you were awesome. Fuck you, woman. I love you.
Oh Mike. Oh there it is.
See?
Nice.
Mike D. Represent from the 519. Shut up, Blair. Showbird! where was I going with this? I totally forget. Oh, right, movie weapons. People never consider like keeping their weapons with a keen edge or sharpening them or whatever.
That always kind of bugs me about Michonne in The Walking Dead. You don't really see her sharpening her sword a whole lot.
I was actually thinking about that the
other day. Gets a lot of mileage out of it.
Say, like, lady, you'd have to be sharpening that thing all the time, and you're lucky her sword didn't shatter when she hit that piece of rebar, like, about a month ago. It's really cool to find out about how movie weapons work and just how logic works. But then again, once you said, it's disbelief.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to have a good movie, chill the fuck out.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things people do in movie universes and TV that
make no sense.
Yeah, like something that always bugs me is when people call each other on the phone, and then they never say goodbye before they hang up. They're just like, click. "Yeah, I'll be there." Click. Another person's probably on the end of the line. Like, wait, I wasn't done.
Yeah, it's like you magically know.
I actually watched a movie and what was it? It was something with Denzel Washington. It might have been Safe House, actually. I think it was like Ryan Reynolds was on the phone with someone in that movie. And he actually says goodbye. And I was like, holy shit. He actually ended the conversation before hanging up the phone. That never happens in movies.
There was a movie I watched a couple years ago. It came out like 2003 or something. It was called Cellular. And that's the first time in a movie I've actually seen a cell phone battery die. And we actually had to go out and get a new battery.
That's like the new horror movie trope. And there's actually a funny YouTube video that just cuts together like 40 different horror movies that all have it in there, where the main characters never get cell phone reception wherever the killer is.
See,
because that's like back in the 80s and 90s, that wasn't an issue. But now it's just like, oh, it's okay. I'll just call 911. Please help us. The end.
Exactly.
So they had to come up with a way to get around that in order to keep
formula
working.
Who does that commercial in the States or is like, can you hear me now? Good. Like Verizon or something like that?
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's AT&T.
See, yeah. I mean, honestly, okay, I can't get a cell signal, but I can get data reception. All those Facebook for help. Or Twitter. See, a lot of horror movies would be rendered moot by, like, social media.
They always just have one throwaway line of, I can't get a signal, and then they put their cell phone away, and you never see it again for the rest of the movie. And the only reason it's in there is because some smartass is going to say, why don't they just call someone on their cell phone?
You know what would be hilarious? If one horror movie was solved because they asked for help on, like, fucking, like, Reddit or something, or 4chan?
And then a bunch of, random. Like, geeky help. People, like a bunch of guys in Guy Fawkes masks show up and
crap out of the person. Or, it'd be awesome if they're like, okay, do you remember that scene in Nightmare on Elm Street where Nancy's setting up all the booby traps for like Freddy Krueger? She shoots the bombs.
Vaguely, yeah.
And like the sledgehammer. I'm just thinking, man, you know how much more destructive Nancy could be if she had the fucking internet?
Yeah, that's true. You could Google all that shit now.
Exactly. Good luck.
Although I think that throws up a red flag for the government if you start Googling stuff like how to make a pipe bomb.
Or stuff like that. I always wonder how people get like that get caught. I'm not going to do this myself. I'm just really curious. But yeah.
Well, I'm sure they have government
surveillance programs. Surveillance, like
yeah,
that
automatically throws up a red flag when someone does a really sketchy Google search. Or if they do it repeatedly.
See, I would love to Google it just to see if someone shows up at the house, but at the same time, I'm not going to tempt fate.
Like, just keep Googling, like, the worst stuff of, like, how to get away with rape.
Like, pipe bomb. Yeah. Why do you keep looking up pipe bomb? I'm a really big fan of CM Punk. I'm sorry. He dropped the pipe bomb in Vegas. I'm sorry.
Just keep looking up all this stuff from, like, the anarchist cookbook until, like, a SWAT team breaks down your door.
Which is scary how often, like I said, that actually happens now to people.
Isn't that a thing where, like, people call in
fake bomb threats and all
that
shit?
Yeah, fake
bomb
threats while people are doing live streaming of games and
stuff.
Yeah,
that's so
fucked
up.
And then they have SWAT teams show up on the live cam. And
like, it's going to take someone getting killed.
That's a major, like, waste of tax dollars, really.
You know, I'm actually waiting for a horror movie to get based around something like that. Where, like, they use the police as their weapon or something. That'd actually be really clever, actually.
Like.
And, of course, the cop just dropped him off.
He didn't actually die. He just walked into a tree.
Ow.
Like, ow.
He hit his nuts.
Yeah, or something like a horror movie where the killer is actually smart enough to call the cops to the wrong house and then, like, blows up the house or something. Which happens in the movie Speed, but...
I was going to say, didn't that happen in Speed?
But it's a good idea.
See, one of these movies... Like, there's one ending to a movie I love. It's a horror movie. It's the latest Child's Play movie. The reboot, quote-unquote. And there's a point where Andy, the original child who Charles Lee Ray told his name to, basically the one who Chucky's body should be, the Chucky kills the family and mails himself to Andy. Ha ha, I'm going to kill you, kid. You fucked over my life. Whatever, right? And Andy gets the package, signs for it, and waits. With a double-barrel shotgun, just waiting for Chucky to pop up. Chucky pops out of the box. He's like, oh, fuck. Just gets blown away. And I'm always like, see, one
of
these
movies... And that's like the end of the movie?
Yeah, that's the end.
Nice.
And I'm just thinking, in this post-9/11, post-violence in America, whatever, where are all the armed good guys?
That actually makes me think of there's a Masters of Horror called The Washingtonians.
Yes.
That kind of has a similar ending that kind of comes out of nowhere and you don't expect it at all.
Because and the SWAT team comes out?
Yeah, you're expecting like the dark ending where they're going to murder the family or something. But then this whole SWAT team comes in just
wastes.
Yeah, wastes all the bad guys and it's amazing.
And
it's
they're like, yep, well, that's enough of that. And they take George Washington off the $1 bill and it's like George Bush or something. It's like something really stupid like that.
Because with horror movies, you don't actually expect a happy ending. It's weird when it actually works out in the good guy's favor.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
honestly...
It's like a reverse twist.
I mean, a lot of horror movies, in my opinion, could be solved by a AR-15, which is the assault rifle for the States, or a sawed-off shotgun. Like, rawr, I'm scary. Let's see you take a face full of buckshot. But then again, you know, I guess Jason is... But although, to be fair, Jason did get his ass kicked by a SWAT team, and Jason goes to hell and gets blown up. They basically Call of Duty his ass.
Which is really, by that point, he's so indestructible, it's really the only
way
to deal
with
it.
Only way you can
so,
kill
like,
him.
Drop a nuke on him.
I mean, he's basically here, use a grenade launcher. But I was...
As these movies progress, he becomes more and more invincible.
Although, that'd be interesting to see Jason Oh, man, I just got a cool idea. If Camp Crystal Lake turned into some militia survival camp, Jason comes home, but there's a fucking militia there waiting.
Or if the secret twist behind all the Friday the 13th movies is that all these kids are sent there on purpose, and it's like a testing ground to find the ultimate warrior, because whoever can survive Jason can survive anything.
There was a comic book, I want to say, where they did something, but it was like people fight Jason, but it's like a TV show or something, or like rich people pit themselves.
They're like broadcasting it
or something like that. I'm not sure.
An idea I had once was like where it's something like that, where it's like a camp or a cabin, and the people get sent there, and they all get killed or whatever. And instead of being a reality show, they film the whole thing, and then it gets turned into a horror movie. And at the end, you find out that all the horror movies, like the Freddy and Jason movies and stuff, were actually real, and it was just people like following them around and filming them.
You know,
how's that for meta?
One movie that I think spoofed the horror genre and did it right, it's taken a while to grow on me, but I really appreciate it now, is Cabinet in the Woods.
I didn't really like the ending of Cabin in the Woods that much.
I like how everybody dies. I did not see that coming.
I enjoyed Cabin in the Woods overall.
The first time I saw it, I hated it. Then the more I watched it with like a bunch of friends, like about a year ago. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm okay with this. It works. And I like how basically the horror movies are like,
again,
sacrifices.
At least it's like giving you a new spin on the genre, which is what I was saying. Like, you have to do something different with it. Like, that's what they kind of did with The Rise of Leslie Vernon as well.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm hoping at some point someone makes a good Lovecraftian horror. There's been a few good attempts. I think the most successful is a John Carpenter movie called In the Mouth of Madness, which is fantastic. And he also did another movie called Prince of Darkness. Check that out. That's so good.
Yeah, John Carpenter was really the master of that kind of horror.
But he's also made some really shitty ones, too. Which, I don't know. I think it depends on what's his passion project at the time.
Yeah. Ghosts of Mars was pretty bad. But the thing with Lovecraft is his
horror, all atmospheric.
And his horror always comes from
within.
Learning out, or yeah, like learning more than you should know. I think that's what Lovecraft realized, is that true fear it's like the opposite. It's not fearing what you don't know. It's like finding out too much. It's actually knowing more than you should know. Because usually in a Lovecraft story, people find out like the origins of where the earth came from and like ancient civilizations and stuff like that.
I think he's a little dead.
That's an awesome body.
See, that must have been uncut. That held on that shot for a while. That's another thing, too.
Especially.
Screaming does nothing. Shut up. You're giving away your position. I mean, obviously,
well, if you were in that situation, you would just scream involuntarily.
Yeah, I'd be like once, but not like... I mean, it's weird. Blair has often described me as being unusually in control in certain situations.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, there's certain times where everyone seems to be panicking.
And you're like, okay,
and
I'm
completely calm about it. Like, let's handle this kind of thing.
Yeah, like,
so
for example.
I might not do too bad in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, because you're going to have your, like, kind of wits about you.
But I have a very low threshold for pain. That would be my big issue. Like, if I was fighting zombies or a slasher or something.
Yeah. I'm not bad for pain, depending. like, one example I can think of is years ago, I was almost in a really bad car accident. Like, we slid so close to this 18-wheeler. We were going to a hockey game, me and a few friends.
She still didn't close that curtain.
And everybody in the car is screaming and freaking the fuck out. And literally, I remember looking at the driver saying, well, this is going to suck, isn't it? Hell, I think that's even happened to you and I. We've had a few close calls in your truck. I'm thinking, oh, well. Just can't get worked up about this.
Yeah, there's a few.
Yes, put the tickle trunk there. That will help.
Back when I used to have my truck.
See, lady, worry less about barricading the door and find a weapon. And I'm sure
especially since all that shit just keeps falling down anyways.
I mean, sure, you've made a annoying barrier, but not an impassable barrier.
Wonder who all the... Are those all, like, presidents on the wall behind her?
Maybe, I'm not sure.
It looks like all the versions of the Doctor up to that point.
See, that's something Jason couldn't beat the Doctor. He just kills him, he just regenerates. Well, I guess unless he gets his head cut off. But even then...
That would be an interesting crossover.
Jason.
Freddy versus Jason versus Doctor Who.
Somewhere, Dave, there's a fan fiction.
Yeah, but that's probably like an erotic fan fiction for someone
you know
who had a
no
hard-on
one
for Matt
think
Smith
to look
or
for
something.
You in these movies if you could be really fucking quiet? The refrigerator.
What about the refrigerator?
You could hide in one if you were small enough.
Oh.
The problem is, I guess, is emptying it quick enough.
Plus you... Yeah,
well,
plus you
could...
have
the door open a little bit.
Yeah, you could
just like
die
a wedge.
By being in a refrigerator.
What are you looking
for? Especially because a lot of the older ones, like that one, lock from the inside.
My wife is interrupting our DVD commentary. I'm not sure what she's looking for. Babe, you should not wear all purple. Y'all look like Barty. I love
no,
you.
No, she looks like that grape girl from Willy Wonka.
Veruca Salt, is it? Now she's jumping on me.
No, it was Violet Beauregard.
Oh, that's it.
Violet, you're turning violet, Violet. Oh.
It's the climax of the movie. Please get off.
Blair, you're turning violet, Blair.
This is marriage, folks. You two could look forward to this. You know what? I just had a really clever thought. You know how she was just in the kitchen?
Yeah.
She should just grab a handful of salt or fucking cayenne pepper.
Oh, yeah.
Throw that shit it's in like, someone's eyes. Good luck. I mean, I'm sure Jason's all supernaturally powerful and shit, but let's see you get a can full of mace in the face. As far as I know,
yeah,
she's still alive.
That's the big twist of this movie is that she meets up with the killer and doesn't realize who it is, so she's not going to throw...
Pepper
in the face of the person who's trying to help you. Hi, I'm Mrs. Voorhees.
What are you doing? Just in case. And I'll say this. Pamela Voorhees is a hell of a shot. With all the arrows. She's taking out like two people. Like fucking Hawkeye.
And then using all those bodies to taunt the survivors.
Yeah, like she's smart. Goddamn strong. I mean, those guys
yeah, she would have to
light.
Have, like, picked them up and chucked them through the window and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like she's got a fucking stepladder.
It's a weird version of Monopoly. Like, I wonder when that came out.
My guess would be, like, mid-70s.
Like 60s, 70s. You got Park Place and Boardwalk.
See, realistically, this is the most takeable of all the Friday the 13th because you're only fighting, like, a 60-year-old woman.
Well, it is really, like, the most realistic one.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, like, Super Zombie or
yeah.
Mongoloid Jason, which he becomes earlier. which I don't think I'm allowed to say that word, but that's how they described him before, so I'm using it in that context. Would you realize Friday the 13th would never have happened if someone was simply a good Samaritan and just helped out Jason when he saw him getting drowned?
But everyone was a dick.
Yep. Because he was the special kid.
I would love it if someone made like a prequel series sort of akin to Bates Motel, but taking place at Crystal Lake in the 70s.
And maybe there's more going on there than what's kind of being led on. Actually, there was a series of novels in the 90s, I remember, involving Jason's mask. People would find them, and they'd go nuts. And, like, they become superpowered killers themselves until they had the mask knocked off them or they died.
Weird. Isn't that what kind of happens in, like, that one Goosebumps episode
about
the Halloween mask? Yeah.
Kinda, yeah. Which, you know what? For Friday the 13th, all this is arrested. It has a lot in common with Goosebumps.
In what other ways?
Well, you think about it. It's a simple revenge tale. Just, you know, there's a body count here as opposed to Goosebumps.
Yeah. Which apparently there's a Goosebumps movie coming out later
this year.
With
Jack Black as R.L. Stine.
Yeah.
It might be okay. Who knows?
I'll give it a chance.
I used to really enjoy the live action series on Fox. I think my favorite one was called Say Cheese or Die, or Say Cheese and Die or something.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't allowed to watch Goosebumps as a kid because my parents thought I would have nightmares.
Like, I've told this story multiple times on Twig. The first thing I saw was Friday the 13th Part 5.
But I was in, like, grade 3, so... The first thing I saw was... Or the first movie I remember watching was The Little Mermaid. So
Fox and the Hound and Friday the 13th Part 5 are my two clearest memories. Obviously, quite the spectrum there.
Yeah.
See, this is what you get for not wearing camouflage. Now, if this movie took place now, she'd run. She'd probably have a gun stash somewhere and blow her away. It's MacGyver time.
Why do they many guns? What is this, a police precinct?
I think it's meant to be like their rifle range, but even still, that's a little excessive.
Why would they have a rifle range at a children's camp? Don't shoot each other.
Maybe like 22s or like loaded for like kind of quail or something.
That's a pretty awesome camp, I guess.
Fuck yeah.
Although I'm pretty sure that's illegal, but...
You know what would be awesome? If you just sat there and... One of my favorite strategies in Call of Duty is to just lay on the floor and wait for someone to come to you. When Mrs. Voorhees opens the door, just fucking plug her. Bitch, I will pop you in the kneecaps.
Yeah, some of the shots in this movie look amazing on Blu-ray. Some of it's grainy, like I said earlier, but stuff like this looks really nice.
And for some reason, there's a scene in Ninja Turtles the movie, the first one, where Michelangelo and Donatello are watching TV, and they're watching this cartoon of the tortoise and the hare, and he's like, do something, ninja kick the damn rabbit. And I'm watching that scene there thinking, hit her with the shot like that, fucking crank her like a baseball bat. I mean, you don't stop until you see the red jelly oozing out of Kitty's ears, if you catch my drift, right?
Yeah, or especially if you know she murdered all of your friends.
Yeah, like, fucking knock her ass down, break her hands, or shoot her in the kneecaps. Let's see how tough you are now, tough guy.
However, what if that... Again, another idea for a horror movie twist. What if there was a guy who, like, put people in this kind of a situation and then made it look like someone was the killer?
And framed
like, put
them
behind
for
the mask or whatever? Yeah, and then they shoot the shit out of that person because they're like, you killed my friends! And that person wasn't even the killer. It was just, like, a random person. And now that... like the survivor becomes the killer.
I can see that. That actually would be kind of clever. Here's an idea. Get her. Back and get the fucking Jeep. Sure, there's a corpse in it, but you can deal with that.
She's seen enough corpses. She should be desensitized by
exactly.
now.
She's had enough sanity loss in a short amount of time. She's good. Cayenne pepper, turn around, I'm telling you. Hey, you're moving. I wonder where she is. She's actually kind of lucky Mrs. Voorhees didn't sniper her with the friggin' arrows, because she seems to be a pretty dead shot.
She had a lot of practice during...
Those
the
30
time
years
when,
or
yeah, when she was running the camp.
She was preparing for the Hunger Games.
And apparently she had, you know, like a big cabinet of rifles as well. Watch out, that creepy guy likes to hide in that pantry.
God sent me here. Why here? See, that's another thing, too. Horror movies, one thing is the protagonists get fucking stupid. Let's hide in a place that has no clear way out.
That's true. There's only one exit. Like, if she breaks in there, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, and honestly...
she has you cornered.
And if she were to sit there and listen, she could probably hear you breathing.
Plus, anyone who's really good at hide and seek knows that the best way is to just keep moving.
Yep.
I remember playing hide and seek once with some friends of mine around my house. Like, we were probably like 12, 13. And the one guy was super, like,
stealthy,
skinny and agile. Yeah, and stealthy. And we eventually, I think we just gave up. And just went back around the campfire we had, and then he just like walked out and joined us. We were just like, dude, we couldn't find you. We gave up.
My favorite.
And I guess he kept bouncing around from place to place. Like, he never stayed in one spot. But I mean, this was a guy who could curl up his body into a human basket so other people could carry him around. So.
Kick her fucking ass. Ninja kicked the damn rabbit. I remember we played, I can't remember what the game was called, but you played as different animals. Some people were like hunters and others were like rabbits and shit. And like predators and shit.
I do not remember that game, but okay.
Yeah, it was at this place called the Outdoor Education Center near where I used to live. And we played during the winter. Obviously, I'm a big friggin' guy, right? So I decided, you know what, I'm a rabbit. I cannot take down a fox or a bear. I'm dead if I'm discovered, right? So my strategy was camouflage. So I just dug myself a hole in like a snowbank, covered myself over with snow just enough that I could see what was going on, and I could pull down my mask. Which I was, like, I had, like, a mask hoodie or whatever. And I could just hide there in the snow. I think I was one of the last ones left alive when the game was over after, like, an hour. I'm always willing to hide. Hell, when I was younger, I used to get called the graceful fat fuck because I could move so, like, quiet. She has no leverage with that. Kick her ass. Now watch her hands.
Really does take unusually long for her to die in this movie.
Yeah, like, seriously, finish her off.
You had two chances already.
Either beat her with the rifle, beat her with the frying pan. Dramatic climax. Not yet. She's going for the Daniel Bryan yes lock. Oh. Now watch.
More intense. She's got man hands.
Now that head was actually held on by toothpicks. Because they wanted, like, okay, we have to do this in one shot. Because it's not going to look good otherwise. And luckily they got it.
It's awesome how they pulled off effects like that back in the day.
That is the glory that is Tom Savini. Like him and Greg Nicotaro, who trained under Savini, I'm pretty sure. Stan Winston. Masters of their craft.
I think Greg Nicotaro is the one who keeps winning the best makeup award at the Oscars or something.
That's impressive, and he came from little horror movies. I think his first movie, I want to say, was Day of the Dead, but I'm not sure about that one.
Hmm.
And then the guy who plays Jason is actually still doing conventions and stuff. His name's Ari, I think it is. And the makeup was literally sliding off. Like, all right, guys, one shot. Make a count.
Oh, in this movie, you mean?
Yeah. Which, the killer's dead. Fuck floating out in the river. Walk towards town. Yeah, I mean, what if you tip over or something, you know? I love how it lures you into this false sense of security. Yeah, this is a jump scare that I think actually worked. Because you didn't see it coming.
Watching this.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can imagine the people in the theater were just, like, getting ready to get out of their seats and go home at this point.
Yep.
Nice.
So cool.
It's probably the most effective part of the whole movie.
See, I think she's much prettier now that we can see her in full light as opposed to the dim lighting of the cabin. I don't know, just an observation. And I guess there's something very comforting about the white light of a hospital. Puts you at ease, I guess.
Really?
I think so.
Hospitals have all this fluorescent lighting that makes everyone look even more sick.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of them, clearly. But I don't know. I think it puts you at ease. Or it can. But then again, some people are freaked out by them, so. In a hospital? Well, they kind of did that with Halloween Part 2.
What?
But he's still out there.
I'm surprised she didn't look right into the camera at that point.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there. For some reason, I don't remember that part of this movie. Like, I thought it just ended with Jason jumping out of the water.
I remember it, but, yeah. Well, folks, that was our commentary. The first Friday the 13th commentary for this year. There will be another one coming out in November for that Friday the 13th. So hopefully you'll join us just after your Halloween there for another enlightening experience. But I guess, Dave, what are your feelings on Friday the 13th here?
I don't know, they're like every good 80s horror, they're like cheesily entertaining, and you don't really have to do too much thinking, just kind of turn off your brain and enjoy the ride, I guess.
Mm-hmm. For me, the first one is arguably one of the best horror movies that ever made, in my opinion, because it throws you off. Absolutely. Like, there's a certain kind of magic to these movies. And I think it'll be very hard for us to see another movie like this again, or at least this groundbreaking in this genre. So, hopefully, like I said, you guys will continue to enjoy our commentaries on this. Like I said, the next one we're going to do, we're probably going to do Friday the 13th Part 6. Which was directed by Tom McLaughlin, and where we first see Super Jason, so to speak. And we start to see the humor come out in the Friday the 13th series. So definitely my favorite of them, but hopefully you'll join us next time. So for This Week in Geek, we have been. And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodden. There's a death curse around these parts. Ooh. Get the fuck out of my pantry. Asshole.